We need to know that the words of the Medrash have multiple meanings. We have Pardes, Pshat, Remez, Drush, Sod. And the depths of the Medrash are really the depths of the understanding of how God runs the world. If you really want to know Jewish Ashkafa, Jewish Emunah, you have to know how to learn Medrash. The secrets of Jewish philosophy are buried in the Medrash. You just need to know the codes, how to decipher them. And that, the greatest rabbis had on tradition. When we read the Medrash, we just see the stories. But we have to know that the stories are fantastic stories that capture our focus, our attention, but there's a lot more depth behind the stories. And we're up to page chapter 38, Lamed Ches in the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. And the Medrash had been describing Yaakov's life in accordance with the prophet Amos' description of how a person is evading wild animals one after another. The bear, the lion try to kill him. And finally, after he's made it from all these wild animals and he thinks he could come home and take a sigh of relief, he's made it home, he leans against the wall, and out slithers a snake and bites him. And that's a description the Navi Amos gives. And the Medrash says this is a reference to Yaakov Avinu. That's Yaakov Avinu's life. He had to contend with Lavan who wanted to kill him. And then he had to contend with Esau who wanted to kill him. And he made it home back to the land of Israel. He made it out of both of their hands. And in the land of Israel, his daughter is abducted. So that's where the Medrash is holding. Let's begin. K'tiv, the verse says in Amos, Uva Avayit, the person finally comes home. V'samach yado al akir, he leans his hand against the wall. Unshacho nachash. And then the snake bites him. When Yaakov finally came home to his territory, to the land of Canaan, Nishachon Nachash, the snake bit him. Ve'ez Nachash, what snake is that? Ze Shechem ben Chamor, that is Shechem, the son of Chamor. Shaita vito shel Yaakov yoshevto alim. Dina, you know what a pious girl she was. She was a modest girl. Dina was sitting inside the tents. She wasn't going out with the guys. She wasn't partying. Nasa Shechem ben Chamor. But Shechem, he got word that a new girl came to town. So what did he do? Hevi mesachakot ne'arot chutzala metofefot betupim. He hired girls like her, going outside her tent, playing and playing the drums. So Dina sees a modest event. There are girls dancing and playing with drums. She didn't even go out to dance. She just went out to look at the dancers and the drums. And when she got out of the tent, Vishalila, so Shechem abducted her, Vishachavota, and he slept with her, Vihalta, and she became pregnant, Vyalda et Osna, and she bore a child named Osna. Yes?
Snakes are phallic symbols, so it's interesting that instead of a snake attack, that my daughter was sexually assaulted.
Excuse my ignorance. What is a phallic symbol?
A penis.
Ah, really? Okay. I didn't know that.
In
Tanakh, is that so?
I don't know. I don't know if it's used that way in Jewish.
I can't remember the place.
In a lot of pagan mythology, it certainly is used as a phallic symbol of a snake. There are stories of a snake enters a woman and she gives birth, things like that.
The Gemara discusses that snakes can sometimes have an affinity for a certain woman and things like that, but to say that it's that symbol, I don't know. So Dina becomes pregnant from Shechem, and she has a daughter who's named Osnas. V'amru bnei Yisrael leorga. So the other tribes wanted to kill the girl. They said she's an illegitimate daughter. Shachshav.
Who was it that was? It says it wasn't Yaakov that was mentioned as the fellow running from the wild animals, was it? It was someone else, and they said it was.
That this verse is a reference also to Yaakov Avinu.
But who was it mentioned?
Doesn't say a specific person. It says just as a person would. Okay. You could look it up in Amos, the fifth chapter. Amos. So the children of Israel wanted to kill her. They said, "She'achshav yomu kol out. She has znut po le Yaakov." They'll say that our tents aren't pure. They say, look, they're just like everyone else. They have some kids from this husband, there's some kids from that husband. So they have a girl over there. She's the legitimate child. They said, this ruins the whole concept of the Jewish people. Nasa Yaakov. Yaakov didn't agree with his kids. Yaakov said, you don't kill the girl for that. Hevi tzitz. He brought a tzitz. What's a tzitz? A piece of gold, a headband of gold. V'chatav alav shem HaKodesh. And he wrote on that headband of gold, God's holy name. V'talal tzavara, and he hung it around her neck. Now she has an amulet to protect her. V'shilcha, and he sent her v'alchala, and she went her way. So it seems like she was old enough to go. So Yaakov sent her off, and there are different midrashim that discuss how'd she get down to Egypt. Somehow, she made her way down to Egypt, this girl. V'akol tzafui lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And God was watching. And God sees, and God sees to the distant, and God knows what's about to happen. V'yarad Michael HaMalach v'oridah Mitzrayim levito shel Potiphera. And he took her down to Egypt to the house of Potiphera. Now, Potiphar had a wife, and Potiphar was castrated. Shaita osnatu yal Yosef li'isha. And this girl, Osnas, was really supposed to be Yosef's wife. Technically, Dina was supposed to be his wife. But after Dina was abducted by Shechem, so it was ruled in heaven that her daughter, Osnas, she would be Yosef's wife. The Shvatim each married a sister. Each one, there are two opinions in Chazal. One opinion is they married girls from Canaan. One opinion is that every Shevet was born with a twin sister. Going with that opinion, there's an opinion that says that Dina was supposed to be Yosef's wife. And what happened was that after this happened with Shechem, so Yosef did not marry her. The Medrash says that Shimon took her in. But Yosef would ultimately marry her daughter. Osnas, the daughter of Dina. Vaita ishto shel Potiphera akara. Potiphar's wife was really barren. There are different midrashim as to whether she was barren or he was barren. Vegidla ota kevat. And she raised her as though she was her own daughter. He asked about adoption. Here you have another example of adoption. So this girl was adopted by Potiphar and his wife, and the wife raised her. Uksheirad Yosef leMitzrayim, and when Yosef came down to Egypt, lekachalo, he married this girl. So he looked for a good shidduch. In all of Egypt, there are all black people, and there's one white girl. And she's this adopted daughter of his master. Remember, Yosef was a servant in the house of Potiphar. So, the Egyptians...
I thought black people came from Kush, not Mitzrayim. Because Kush was turning black because he's fornicated.
I'm sorry,
because Ham fornicated on the ark, and so he was punished by having his son Kush come out of black.
So one Medrash says that all his children were black. One of Ham's children was Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was a son of Chom. Maybe there's such a Medrash, I don't know. So Osnas becomes Yosef's wife. When Yosef becomes a minister of Egypt, so Yosef goes back to Potiphar's. I think Rashi quotes that Medrash. I think Rashi on the Torah quotes it. Shneimar, as the verse says, "Vayten lo et Osnat, but Potiphera kohenon liisha." Paro gave Yosef Osnas, the daughter of Potiphera, who was the priest of On, to be his wife. So here you see another example. What you asked earlier, here you see another example of the adopted child being called as though he's the biological child. Osnat is referred to in the Torah as the daughter of Potiphar, even though she was really his adopted daughter. Shimon v'Levi kina'u kina gdola l'aznut. Shimon and Levi, they were very zealous with regard to adultery. Shneimar, as you find, that their father said, what'd you guys do? And what do they say? Hachizonai aset achoteinu. Is he going to treat our sister like a prostitute? V'lakhu yishrabo v'argut kol anshei Shechem. They each took their sword, killed out all the people of Shechem. So, the Medrash seems to side with them. It's interesting, because the way the conversation goes is Yaakov comes to them and says, Achartem oti, you destroyed me. Look what a danger you've done. How could you do this? What do they answer him? Are we going to let him get away with this? Is he going to treat our sister like that? Yaakov never answers. So you read the conversation. You see, you have the sons. They got very upset. You have the father. He says, what you guys did was terrible. And they tell him something. What were they teaching him? He didn't know what happened. It wasn't his daughter. They're giving him a lesson on how to be pure. He says, what'd you guys do? They say, are we going to let him get away with this, doing this to our sister? Who wins in the conversation? Who gave in to whom? So at the end of their days, Yaakov tells his kids, you guys messed up. You guys, cursed is your anger, how brazen it is. You see that Yaakov didn't give in. But this Medrash seems to go with that who won the conversation? Shimon and Levi. Because the Medrash quotes Shimon and Levi's response. It doesn't quote anything other than that. Well, we'll see. It quotes the continuation. But the Medrash says, Shimon and Levi, they were zealous. As the verse says, Achizonaya set achotenu. Will he make our sister into a prostitute? Velachu ish chalbova agut konon she Shechem. So they each took their sword and killed out all the people of Shechem. Ukshishama Yaakov, and when Yaakov heard they did that, Nityarel b'mod, he got very scared. Shamar, Yaakov said, Achshav yitzu kol ha'me'aretz v'yaspo alai v'yarkuni. Now all the nations of the land will gather. There's a UN in the world. What happens in the UN? You know, I mean, if there's an excuse to go beat up on the Jews, so everyone gets together and says, no, you're terrible. So Yaakov says, what are they going to do? They'll all get together, all the nations will suddenly unite, and they'll all come and fight me and destroy me. So he cursed their anger. Shenemah, the verse says, how cursed is their anger, for it is brazen. How cursed is their wrath, for it is tough. And he also cursed their sword, b'lashon yevanit, in Greek. Shenemah, the verse says, their mecherot. What is mecherot? Shevanim korin lecherev macher. Macher is in Greek sword. He said they have stolen property, their swords. That doesn't belong in our family. Shamu kol malchei haaretz v'nityaru meod. What? Yeah? How do you say it in Greek?
Macher.
Macher. Okay.
That's ancient or modern?
It's interesting because Chazal say that in Gilad there were a lot of murderers. In Gilad, in the territory of Gilad, there were a lot of murders. And one of the children of Gilad was Machir. His name, he named his child Machir. There's an area in that territory, on the eastern side of the Jordan, that's called Machir. The area of Machir. Machir, the family of Machir, was given the territory of Gilad. And the Talmud tells us that in Gilad there were many murders. And we see that. In the time of Yoshua. Yeah.
Linguistically,
they didn't have any connection with that. Pardon. I don't know. You see that Yaakov Avinu used the term. Chazal tells that he used it based on Greek. So Chazal say we have a lot of terms in the Tanakh that Chazal say are from other languages.
But in the Tanakh from Greek? Yeah. Historically, Mishnah Hebrew was more.
Yeah, but you do find Yachte Elohim LeYefet. Chazal tells that Greek existed from the time of Noah. That's what Chazal said. That the Greek in the time of Talmud was adulterated. In the time of Noah, you had beautiful Greek, and then it became adulterated as the generations passed.
I don't know how it fits historically.
A little bit after Noah. Okay. Yeah. What does history say about languages? What do you mean?
Oh, like the evolution of Greek and what that was, like the tribes from the north.
Okay, fine.
From the north, immigrated to Greece, and there they are paying.
That's not a contradiction. But that's not a contradiction. There were people around who were talking this language. What in the Talmud's time was called Greek. It doesn't have to be the people in Greece spoke it in the time of. Moshe Rabbeinu or Yaakov Avinu. That's not what the Talmud means. The Medrash means what we call Greek, this language. Who spoke it? Shamu kol malchei haaretz v'nityaru meod. What happened? The nations, all the kings heard that two kids killed the whole city. Amru, they said, im shnei bnei Yaakov asu hadavar hazeh, if the two kids of Yaakov could do this, im yasfu chulam yochlim nachir tolam, if they unite, you have the whole family going to war, they could destroy the whole world. So the fear of God fell upon all the nations of the land. They recognized, wait a second, God's helping these people. How could two kids do this? Must be, this family is amazing, we got to be careful with them. The verse says, the fear of God was on all the cities around Yaakov. So what does Yaakov do? He takes his children, his grandchildren, his wives, and he goes to Kiryas Arba to his father, to Yitzhak. Yeah.
So
From this appears to me that the father's fears in them were not his justification for reproving his sons was not was proven to be false.
I don't know. I don't know. You see that ultimately Hashem gave them extra protection, but you see they needed it. What would have happened had Hashem not done that miracle? You see that miracle was necessary. You don't do things and rely there'll be a miracle.
Right, but in the end of the whole chapter,
you don't judge things based on the end. It's like a person who takes his car and drives off the cliff, and the car rolls over, and he lands, and he walks out okay. He says, "You see, nothing too terrible about that." No, it had a good ending. It didn't have to have that ending.
Okay. Well, see, according to the Midrash, the conclusion of that chapter seems to allude that
God didn't want them destroyed. I don't know that they were right. God didn't want them destroyed. That doesn't prove they were right. You see, Yaakov didn't give in.
But the very act, according to the way he brings the pasuk, the very act of them resulted to a greater fear and.
Who says that's positive? Who said it's positive to have fear? You see that Yaakov was making peace treaties. Abraham, Yitzhak, they were making peace treaties. I don't know that fear is a positive thing. It was necessary at that moment. But I don't know that that's a positive thing. Yaakov comes to his father and he finds Esav and his wife sitting in the tent of Yitzhak. So Yaakov sees they're all there in the tent with Yitzhak. So he sets his tent outside. He's separate. He doesn't want his kids mingling. And this is a mistake that people sometimes make. People grow up in an irreligious environment, so they don't care to go to an irreligious environment to bring up their kids. They say, "I grew up that way. What's the problem?" It's wrong. If you could give your kids a good environment, you're making the greatest investment in the world. You overcame that. And you came this far. Let your kids start higher up. You know the story about the guy who climbed Mount Everest. He plans for 2 or 3 years to climb, and then he makes the trek, and in the winter, and it's tough, and he's climbing, and after weeks and weeks and weeks, he finally makes it to the top, and he made it. You guys know the story? Yeah? He looks out. He breathes the air. He feels the sweat dripping down his forehead, but he made it. He's looking, he feels like he's on top of the world. He's been waiting for this moment for ages. And he's looking around. And after a minute or two of taking in the view and realizing that he's so high up, he hears some noise behind him. So he looks around and he sees men, women, children. He looks at the children and after all his work, he says, "They climbed up to here. Those kids, they climbed up to here." So the people tell him, "No, they couldn't make the climb. They were born here. They were born up here. So you guys made the climb. You made it this far. But you can let your kids be born here. Work their way up from here. There's still more to go. A person shouldn't put his kids all the way back down and say, 'Okay, now you guys, I climbed up. You can climb up.' We don't do that. We say, let them start at the top of the mountain. Let them work their way up from where I am." And Yaakov comes and he finds Esav and his wives in the tent. So he sets up his tent outside. Let them have a better environment. It's true, Yaakov grew up with Esav. He had no choice, but he doesn't have to give that to his kids. V'ra'i Yitzchak Yaakov et nashav et banav et benotav et kol ha'shelo. Yitzchak sees his son, Yaakov, with his wives. He sees his grandchildren, his granddaughters. Everything Yaakov owns, v'samach v'libonot, Yitzhak was very happy. V'alav ha'katuv omer, and about him the pasuk says, u'rei banim levanecha shalom al Yisrael. You'll see children to your own children, peace over Israel. Who's Israel? Yaakov is Israel. And there's something that sometimes has to be factored in. People have all kinds of considerations when it comes to their parents. And there are a lot of things to consider, because sometimes parents can ruin a person's chinuch. But if it's at all possible, a person should also factor that the fact that parents see their kids and their grandchildren, that's nachas to them. So that's something to factor. Like Yitzhak, he sees his children and grandchildren. We don't give up chinuch for that. We do have to know how to do it, but we also have to know that that has a certain value. Yeah?
How much validity is there to say that...
I'm with you.
Because
Shalom, that's our pizza. Give me 1 second. Yeah. So the Medrash says, Yaakov sets his tent up outside of Yitzchak's tent. And Yitzchak looks on at his son and daughters-in-law and grandchildren, and he's happy. And that's what the pasuk says, Urei vanim levanecha, when you see your children have kids, Shalom on Israel, peace over Israel. Rabbi Levi Omer, Rabbi Levi says, Bishata sifato shel Yitzchak, when Yitzchak was collected to heaven, when he passed away, he left his cattle, his wealth, everything he owned, he left his two children. When Avram passed away, so he gave gifts to Ishmael and sent them away. Gave gifts to his other kids, sent them away. And left his primary inheritance for Yitzchak. But when Yitzchak passed away, so both kids had the same mother. There weren't kids from the maid. Yitzchak's two children, Esav and Yaakov, they're both twins. So they both had equal rights. And therefore, he left his inheritance to both. And that's why we find that both did kindness with him. Shneimar, as the verse says, Esav and Yaakov went to bury him. And I think the Medrash is alluding to the fact that if he would have skimped Esav's inheritance, he wouldn't have shown up. Yaakov, of course he shows up, even if he doesn't get an inheritance. But the Medrash says that Yitzchak left over to both, and therefore they both honored him in burial. Amar Esav liYaakov, so Esav tells Yaakov, bro, nachlok kol ma sheniach lanu aba lishnei chalakim. Let's divide everything dad left over into two portions. Vani borer, and I get to choose, sheani habechor. I'm the firstborn. I gave you the rights to the double inheritance, but I'm still the firstborn, so I get to choose. So Esav tells Yaakov, let's divide, but I pick. Amar Yaakov, so Yaakov says to himself, Arasha hazeh, this evil one, lo milei no min haosher, he's never satiated, he's never happy, he hasn't had his fill of wealth. Shneimar, as the verse says, gameino lo tisva osher, even his eye, he's never seen enough. He could look at storage house after storage house of wealth, and he's always looking for more. Ma'asa Yaakov, so what did Yaakov do? Chilek lishnei chalakim, he divided the wealth in two. Kol ma sheniach aviv lechelek echad, he took all the wealth, put it on one side. Ve'etel tisrael lechelek echad. Then he said, on the other side is the rights to ultimately inherit the land of Israel. That's what I want. Those are the two parts. Ma'asa Esav, so what did Esav do? He said, gee, this is a tough question. What do I give you? The rights to the land of Israel or all of the wealth? So, Esav didn't know what to do. He went out to get advice. Who does he go to? He goes to Uncle Yishmael. So, Esav rides out. Yishmael rode out to the desert and took Esav rode out to the desert and took counsel with Yishmael. Shneimar, as the verse says, Esav went out to Yishmael. Amar Yishmael le'Esav. So, Yishmael tells Esav, "Hamrivak nanias ba'aretz. What are you worried about? Right now, you have all these different nations living in the land of Israel. Yaakov's hope is that ultimately he will inherit the land. You want my advice? You take all the inheritance, you take all the wealth, and don't worry, Yaakov will end up with nothing. So Esav took all the material wealth that Yitzchak left over. And he gave Yaakov the rights to the land of Israel and the deed to the Maras HaMachpelah that he gave to Yaakov. And they wrote a contract, an eternal contract between them. Amar Yaakov le'Esav, so Yaakov tells Esav, Lech me'eretz achuzati me'eretz Kanaan. Please leave my land, my inheritance, from the land of Canaan. Berakach Esav et nashav et kol ashalo. So Esav packed his wives, his children, everything he owned. Shneimar, as the verse says, Esav packed out to the other land from Yaakov. And as reward, as wages for the fact that he cleared his vessels, he cleared the way for Yaakov, his brother, God gave him, what the Torah records, that he had 100 cities from Seir till Magdiel. Shneimar, as the verse says, Aluf Magdiel, Aluf Iram, what's Iram? Zeromi. That's Rome. So Esav was given 100 cities, he was given tremendous strength because he cleared the way for Yaakov. Az Yashav Yaakov Betach V'Shanan Be'eretz Kanan. Then Yaakov sat peacefully in the land of Canaan, Ve'eretz Molato, Ve'eretz Megurei Aviv, in the land where he was born, in the land where his father had lived, as the verse says, Ve'eshev Yaakov Ve'eretz Megurei Aviv. Yaakov settled down. Once Esav is out of the picture, Yaakov could settle down. Now, the Medrash really has finished the part of the story about Yaakov and Esav and Yaakov and Shechem and Dinah. And now the Medrash has to move on. What's the next parsha? After Parshas Vayishlach and dealing with the burial of Yitzchak, dealing with his children, with the wars, we come to Parshas Vayeshev. What happens in Parshas Vayeshev? The fights between Yosef and the siblings. The beginning of Parshas Vayeshev records that Yaakov settled down in the land of Canaan and he had a favorite son. So the Medrash is now going to deal with that, and I think we're going to pick up over here next time. It's very long, this Medrash. I mean, we could continue this for at least another hour. It's really a long, long chapter. You guys with me? We're going to pause here. We'll pick up over here with Zachem next time.
Was Esav like bright red?
That's an excellent question. If you want, you could ask that during questions and answers. If you want. Okay. Let me just put a marker here so I know where we're up to. Guys, do me a favor, leave the slices of pizza. There are still guys in the Bet Midrash who, unless you didn't have a slice it. I told them to come by and pick up their pizza. So guys will still show up, no worries. Okay.
Hope.
Questions, or are we going to do Tehillim? What's the vote? Questions, Tehillim?
I say questions, because I'm getting kind of tired.
Okay, guys, questions okay? Okay. Yosef, fire away.
Okay, one question.
One for you, one for him. We'll see if other guys have questions.
So
just do me a favor, guys, because we're in the beginning of the semester, try to remind everyone what your name is. Yeah, Yosef.
Okay, I'll just read with that. So that's the Judaism hold like Aristotle, that the mind at birth is like a blank slate.
Tabula rasa.
Yeah. Or perhaps like Descartes, that the theory that certain behavior and ideas are innate. And how does this fit in with the Midrash?
Which Midrash?
About the angel that teaches the fetus Torah and then.
Okay. Wow. What a big question. Okay. Guys, we'll try to deal with that. Let's see if we could get a short, concise answer. So the question was asked, do we in Judaism go with the belief of tabula rasa, that the baby's mind is like a blank slate? And what about the Medrash that says that the child learns all the Torah in his mother's womb? So let's begin with the beginning. What's in the beginning? God creates the world. What is God creating? God creates the world. God creates Adam. Where does God create Adam?
Mount
in the Garden of Eden.
No, he creates him on Mount Moriah.
Okay, excellent. I would have thought you were here when we learned in Pirkei Avot Eliezer. Very good. The Medrash says that, you're right. So, Adam was created from the holiest place on earth, the Holy of Holies. And he was placed in a perfect place, the Garden of Eden. Why? He's going to be kicked down there. Why does the baby have to learn all of the Torah if he's going to forget it? So the first thing you have to know, that the Pasuk says, Hashem created the man straight. God says, I created a good being. Every person is created with a conscience. And, I mean, there are abnormalities. We're not saying there aren't psychos in the world. But the average person, we're talking about general population, is created with a good, kind heart. Every person is created as a good person. Now, you could try to uproot that good from a person. A person can try to uproot it from himself. But to say that a person is born as a tabula rasa, there's no conscience, no concept of good or bad, no concept of holy, no concept of anything, you let him grow wild and he'll just be a wild animal. No, we don't say that. That's part of the concept of learning the whole Torah, that when a person learns Torah, to his conscience, it's something external and something that's new and a learned behavior. But to his subconscious, it is a return to the natural state. We are returning. We are chozer b'tshuva, but I was never here. Why do you tell me I'm chozer b'tshuva? I'm returning. What is teshuva? Returning. Where am I returning to? I'm returning to where I was in my mother's womb, where I was in the Garden of Eden. What do we say every morning? Elokai neshama shenatata bi tehorahi. My God, personal. Not Elohim, but Elokai. There's a personal connection. Neshama shenatata bi tehorahi. Right? So every morning we're given a pure neshama. Yes, we stain it with the way we live our lives, but at the end of the day, we don't say that a person is born like an animal and just let him grow wild and he'll be an animal. No. We say you have to hone a child, you have to help a child, and a child, innately, every one of us is good. Sometimes we cover it up, so we have to uncover it. On the other hand, we cannot ignore that people have different tendencies. As I'll tell us, a person can be born an angry person, a person can be born with a tendency to spill blood. That does not mean that a person is born with a predetermined future. He has a predetermined tendency. The question is, what will he do with that? And that's what we saw at length on Thursday nights, in the Rambam's introduction to Pirkei Avos, where the Rambam says one of the basics of Jewish belief is that every person has the capacity to alter his traits. So if a person was born, the Talmud tells us, and he's born red, and he was born with a tendency to spill blood, let him become a moel. He could become a butcher, he could become a professional circumciser. He could do a lot of things that are positive. Let him become a surgeon. He'll spill blood. He'll see plenty of blood, and he'll be helping, saving people's lives. He's not predetermined to be a murderer. He has the predisposition for seeing blood. That's something that's good for him. Fine. Let him use it for the positive. So I think that to say tabula rasa, clean slate, that would be inaccurate. It's not clean. There are tendencies, and there's an innate nature for good, and we have Yetzer Tov and we have Yetzer Hara, and we have to develop them. We also have tendencies that we have to hone and we have to direct. Every person with his strengths and his weaknesses. There's a lot more to be said, but I think that if you're happy, so we'll leave it at that. I mean, there is the Mishnah Elisha ben Avuya, Halomet Yeled Domet. There is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that stresses that when it comes to learning, so a child, it's like a blank slate, in that when you're teaching a child, the child hasn't learned other things before, so it's easy. You just teach him and he gets it. You teach an adult, so he's used to life one way, and he has to unlearn what he's been doing until now. So it's much more difficult. There is that aspect of it, if you want to call it tabula rasa. Yeah?
The question is, do we equate tabula rasa with? I'm not necessarily saying that it's a completely blank slate from the idea of concepts. The child that's born doesn't have, let's say, concepts of what God is or of ideas and knowledge. Perhaps you could argue that a certain intuition of what's good or bad is from his very name, from his nature.
It seems from Chazal that we do have the concept of Tinoch Shenishma. A child grew up in a completely non-Jewish environment. We say that's why he doesn't know anything about how to live a Jewish life. We are not on the level that our nature is in line with the Torah. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they didn't have the Torah, but it made sense to them to eat kosher and keep Shabbos. If we don't have the Torah, we don't see the logic in that. The Torah tells us, God says so, okay, we can see the positive aspects of that. There is an aspect where it is natural. We don't necessarily we don't see that. We're not on the level, but we should, just like we expect of every non-Jew to figure out that God is running the world and become a no-hide. So do we expect of every Jew to figure it out? But that could take a lot of time. It's not something you could expect of someone in day one. Whether a person has a natural inclination to what is right and wrong and good and bad, I think in the Rishonim it seems that in the Rishonim there does seem to be reference that there is a natural recognition within a person of what's good and bad, and there is. It seems that way, but there is also, there are certain things which some Rishonim say a person would not know if not for the Torah, like incest or the arayos. So even though the world adopted what the Torah says, so today it's like a given, but there are Rishonim who write that if given to a person's own logic, so why is this different than anything else?
Yeah, yod is always troubled.
Right, so that's there are Rishonim who say that. Yeah. It does appear in Jonah. So when we say good and bad, we could say that in reference to are we all going to be like, what's that called? Lord of the Flies. Right? Are we all going to be murderers? Or no? What's our nature like? So Chazal also tells us that our nature is to be competitive. Chazal say, in Malay Morai, Yishet Reu Chaim Belau. Not for the fear of the government, people would be swallowing one another alive. That we have that aspect of our nature as well. We do have a nature to be competitive. How do you balance all this? It's a good question.
With regard specifically to the point of being a drunken slave, you see people that are not put in any society, and they've not been exposed. They've not been exposed to speech. They are able to grow up completely like animals if they don't have the power of speech.
I hear. I don't know. And Chazal say that if you have children who aren't taught any language, then they'll end up speaking Hebrew. And it's brought that someone experimented with that, and that's what happened. You could look in Rav Bagad's book. He brings records of that. There's a Rav Bagad, he brings, who was the king? There was some fanatic king who decided he's going to experiment, and he claims that that's what happened. I don't know.
Yeah, so this innate goodness is what we call, is the idea of Musa Kilayot?
Huh?
Like Avraham Avinu, that he
person has to be on a high level. Most people are not Avraham Avinu.
I'm just saying the theory.
In theory, that's a thing. That's our nature, yes. But we're very far from our nature. But remember, a person is composed from the physical and the spiritual. And what he senses most overtly is the physical. And that's what he thinks is natural to him. To be a spiritual being, for most of us, seems unnatural. It seems much more natural for us to spend the night browsing the net and looking at all kinds of things than to be here learning Torah.
Ooh.
Right, I'm worried too. I know, this is the pizza place telling me that by the seat. Shalom.